First of all, anybody who likes or does not like today's topic, you can thank or not thank Marian Tolansky, who takes full responsibility and has been asking me all year. From the second that I said halacha in the beginning of the year, she said, are we going to do Dud Shemesh? And I said, maybe. And again, are we going to do Dud Shemesh? And last week she basically asked the question, I guess we're not going to do Dud Shemesh this year. Yes. Here is, Marian is absolutely the address for all complaints today. The big question is where to begin. So, I'll begin. We'll make it more interesting. At the end of the six pages that I have, which are the typed pages, afterwards there are some photocopies. The first page of the photocopies is the notorious book which has been suppressed, which is no longer sold, which you can't find unless you go to a used bookstore, the first edition of the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata. Now, there are various, I wouldn't even say rumors about this. This goes right down to conventional wisdom. Everybody knows this to be a fact. The question is it a fact or is it not a fact? Everyone knows that the first edition, he was more lenient, and then the second edition, he's more stringent, which is absolutely true, except for the examples where he's more strict in the first edition and more lenient in the second edition, and I can show you examples like that. The Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata is, in my mind, the definitive book in the 20th century written on the laws of Shabbat. It's written by a man who's still alive today, an elderly gentleman from Beit Vagan, Rabbi Neubert. The real significance of the book is not Rav Neubert, who was a first-rate Talmud Chacham. The real significance of the book is that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's name is attached to almost every single footnote. I'm exaggerating somewhat, but not by a lot. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach went through the book, and it's on his shoulders that the book rests. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, by the time that he passed away, was considered to be the posek. You know, they call a lot of people the posek hador. In our lifetimes, there were probably, some of you are a little bit older than me, but in the last 50 years, there have really been two who've been just about universally accepted. One was Moshe Feinstein, and the other was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, although the truth is there's a third one who's alive today, alive and very well, and that's Rav Avadya Yosef. His stature, certainly among Sfaradim, and I suspect among Ashkenazim as well, is one of, certainly among Sfaradim, is an unparalleled source and unparalleled authority, probably of which the likes have not existed in hundreds of years, much more authoritative than either of Moshe or Rav Shlomo Zalman, simply because the sphere of influence that Ovadi Yosef has had. And we will get to Ovadi Yosef on this as well. Any of you who think that I wrote a lot on this, I cut and pasted Rav Avadya's tshuva onto my computer as I was working with it. It came out to 60 pages. Okay, so just what I've produced for you is nothing. So in the first edition of the Shmirat Shabbat, which came out probably close to 40 years ago, Rabbi Neubert writes, and it says page Yud on the top, if you don't see it, Kaf Tet is the one we're looking at. It says, Mutar lahotzi mayim chayim. It says Yud on top. After page 6, which may make it page 7, it says, Mutar lahotzi mayim chamin midud shemesh. One is permitted to use the hot water from a dud shemesh, from a solar heater. Gam ima mayim nitchamamu bo b'shabbat, even if the solar heater worked on Shabbat. V'yafilu im nechnasim b'mkoma mayim karim ledud, and even if new water will come in, umitchamamim ayidei hachamim, and will get heated by the hot water which is there. As a footnote, and I want you to appreciate his footnote here. It's footnote, to back himself up, he writes footnote Samech Zayin. And if you look at Samech Zayin, it is much longer than all the other footnotes on that page. Matter of fact, it takes the whole next page. Not only does it take the whole next page, Yud Aleph, it even takes a good part of Yud Bet as well. And he starts off the footnote by writing, Shamati mipi gadol echad, I heard from one great rabbi. Now, in the world of halacha, you don't have to go any further than that. That's quite problematic, because what you would expect is someone to say the name of the person. What he goes on to say in this footnote is an incredibly weak argument. Now, I'm not going to read it, because you don't know why it's a weak argument yet, but his argument is very, very weak. The fact that he backed down, and when the second edition came out, and you can just compare that now for the moment by turning the page over, not the next side, the next page, where it says Yud Chet, Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata. By the way, notice last time it was Kaf Tet, section 29, in the new edition, which is twice the size of the first edition. Mem Hey, he writes, Tov lehimana milhotzi b'shabbat mayim b'chamim dud shemesh. It is better to stay away from taking water out from the dud shemesh. Im nichnasim b'mkomam ledud mayim karim. If cold water will come in its place, v'heim nechamim ayidei chamim, which will then get warmed by the hot water. And his footnote over here, which is much, much shorter than the footnote that he had in the first edition, is Kuf Kaf Zayin. Shamati mi hagon Rav Shlomo Zalman Orabach. I heard, this is what Shlomo Zalman Orabach said, Uni muko imo. And on Kuf Kaf Zayin, on the bottom, yeah, six lines from the bottom. He says, this is what I heard from Shlomo Zalman. So now you realize that the strength of his first argument, which you have no reason to believe me right now when I told you that it's weak, but he quoted from somebody anonymously, and then he works very, very hard to prove the point. And in the second one, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and says, no, you should stay away from it. Being that most of his book is based on Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it's not all that surprising that he backs down over here. Let me tell you another secret. One second. Let me tell you one more secret about Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He made his reputation as a young man by writing a brilliant book on halacha and electricity. So even though he's a Yerushalmi who never had any formal secular education, as far as I know, he took on the Chazon Ish, and he took on everybody, and his approach to electricity ended up getting accepted, which means when it comes to the technical things over here, he wrote a whole book about it, if you want to give you the references. And Rav Shlomo Zalman understood this topic quite well. A matter of fact, I met a man, I met him a while ago, but I was his elderly gentleman. His wife had passed away, and I was paying a shiva call. And I knew his son told me that he had grown up in the same neighborhood with Shlomo Zalman. Apparently, if I'm not mistaken, this fellow's first cousin was with Shlomo Zalman's Rebbetzin. And not only that, he had a chavruta with him. He would learn with him. And not only that, he was an electrician. And Shlomo Zalman used to speak to him about all of the... And I called him up this week to ask him about the dude Shemesh, to try to get perhaps inside information on what happened between the first edition and the second edition, but he didn't have any... I mean, he knew exactly what it said, but he didn't have anything which I was looking for to share with us. But as I said, we don't know anything yet. All that we know is that the rumor out there is that the first edition is the true edition, and then because of pressure by evil forces, he had to back down, and therefore he changed it. I find that a little bit hard to accept, especially when we're going to learn, we're going to see exactly what went on between the first edition and the second edition and why it changed. I also want to point out another thing, if we weren't that careful. In the second edition, he doesn't say that it is prohibited. What does he say? It is best, tov lehimana. It is best to stay away from. So that's also a very careful language which is used. Now let's try to go back to the Gemara and let's try to learn something. Naomi, what do you want to say? Correct. He doesn't say it's a sore. So now let's begin. The first source is a Gemara in Shabbat, and I will make this very easy for you. I will tell you what the Gemara says first, and I'll do this even easier for you. On the second to last page, which you don't know this, but it's page 11, it's easier to count backwards than going from the beginning. The second to last page is a page from a wonderful book in English on the laws of Shabbat. I have not read the book cover to cover, but everything I've looked in it, I have found him to be very, very insightful, not what you would call too machmir, not too makel, somebody who explains the principles, gives applications. It is a four-volume set called, I believe, the 39 Melachot. It's written by Rabbi David Ribiat, the 39 Melachos, R-I-B-I-I-A-T. And it is a wonderful book to learn or to reference the laws of Shabbat. I once gave a talk in Muncie, and I got a message that he wanted to meet me. So I waited after the class. He came a little bit late. And he apologized for not coming for the shiur. He told me he has my book, and wonderful. But he asked me if I can translate my book into Hebrew. He said, Lashon HaKodesh, not Ivrit. He goes, because your book is in English, and it's very good, and it's too good to be in English, and yeshiva students won't read a book in English, so it has to be in Hebrew. But if you write it in Ivrit, none of them will understand it, so he asked me to write in simple Hebrew. I have not done that yet. I barely know simple Hebrew, so. Let's read his conclusion of the law, and then we'll go back and look at the Gemara. Top of the page. If you want, you can call that Toldot Chama, or you can call that Toldos Chama. You know what? I'll tell you, I'll do a little bit of an introduction before this. You're allowed to cook with the sun on Shabbat. You're allowed to cook with the sun on Shabbat. You are not allowed to cook on Shabbat. You're allowed to cook with the sun on Shabbat. That's what you need to know. That's the background. The reason you're allowed to cook with the sun on Shabbat is not all that simple, but the Gemara tells us black and white, the Shulchan Aruch, black and white, there's no question you can cook with the sun on Shabbat. So therefore, if it's really, really hot this Shabbat, and you really, really want a fried egg cooked on cement, then you would be permitted to take your egg and to crack it on your sidewalk, and then you would be able to... So the pan will become something interesting. Perhaps. Perhaps. I'm sorry I gave that long build-up to why we're going to look here. I want to wait a second and look here after we see the beginning of the Gemara. Let's go back. What? We don't know enough yet. Let's go. I'm sorry for doing this. Let's go back to source number one. V'haditna notnin tavshil otoch habor b'shvil shehu yeshamor v'etamayim hayafim b'ra'im v'shvil shitzaninu v'etzatzanin b'chama b'shvil shichamu lemer v'yosihi v'lo rabbanan. So this whole thing over here about putting water in hot water and cold water in a pit. And it says, no, is this where rabbanan Rabbi Yossi? Now, we don't know yet what the rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi say. And then it says as follows. Amar Rav Nachman taught, b'chama, to cook with the sun, Rashi there says in source 2, b'chama b'shemesh, to cook with the sun, to kule alma lo plige deshari. Everyone agrees that you are permitted to cook with the sun. So again, here there is no debate. You're allowed to cook with the sun. By the way, even this in the 20th century became a debate, and we'll see why, but because of a completely different reason, because of microwaves. Now, just leave that for a second, and maybe we'll get back to that. B'toldot ha'or, toldot ha'or. Now, this is not or, it's ur, right? Or means fire, right? Avram comes from Ur Kasdim. Ur Kasdim is the place of the fire, the furnace. Toldot ha'or. What is toldot ha'or? So, if I take a frying pan and I put it on the fire and I crack my egg, you guys can crack eggs with one hand or you do with two hands?
One.
You do with one. You crack the egg, right? And you put the egg in the frying pan on the fire. That's called bishul. You are guilty of cooking on Shabbat. What if you heated up the frying pan on the fire? Or it was left on the fire before Shabbat started, but you have a hot frying pan, you take the frying pan off the fire, it's still hot, it's still yad soledet, which means that your hand would recoil from touching it, or if you put it on a baby's stomach, this is not how they tested it, but the baby would cry. That helps you understand how much heat we're talking about. That's yad soledet. There is an argument how hot that is, but either way, if you took the frying pan off the fire, and then you cracked an egg on that frying pan, would that egg cook?
Yes.
Yes, the egg will cook. That's not called or, that's called toldot or. That is, toldot is something which comes from. Eila toldot is the next generation. So a next generation, so let's go back. The Gemara said here, chama de kuliyama lo plige de shari. When it comes to cooking in the sun, everyone agrees it's allowed. Betoldot haor, second generation from fire, kuliyama lo plige de asir. Everyone agrees that you're not allowed to do that. That's asur. Ki pligi, where is there an argument? B'toldot hachama, second generation from the sun. Mar savar, one side says, gazrinan toldot hachama atu toldot ta'or. One says that it is prohibited because the average observer will not know the difference whether that frying pan was heated up in the fire or the sun. What they will see is you just now cracked an egg in a hot frying pan and started to cook. Umar Sava, lo gazrinan, that we don't make such a gzerah. Who are the two sides here? The Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is lenient. Rabbi Yossi said there is no such thing as a gzerah of toldot dechama, second generation from the sun. But the Chachamim say we did make such a gzerah, and the halacha is like the Chachamim. So part of our... Correct. Part of the difficulty here is going to make applications of the principle, but first let's understand the principle. The principle is you can cook in the sun. So therefore, if, for example, you took water and you wanted to make iced tea, and it's a hot day, and you take the tea and you want to put, well, I don't want to get into the whole question of tea bags, whatever, but you put a tea bag in cold water and put it out in the sun, and next thing you know, 3 hours later, that's hot. Was that... It's hot. I'm saying you leave it out in the sun, and the water is hot, and it could even be more than Yad Soledet from using the sun directly. Is that fine? That's absolutely fine. That's called cooking in the sun. You're allowed to cook in the sun. Why? Because cooking in the sun is not cooking. And our instinct would be, in terms of what we know about Shabbat, till we saw this halacha, all of our cooking instinct is you have kli rishon, kli sheni, kli shlishi, and as you get further and further, it gets lenient and more lenient. So therefore, here we have a halacha that, if you never learned this, is counterintuitive, because we're told that the sun is allowed, but the kli sheni from the sun, or it's not exactly kli sheni, but it's a derivative or it's second generation, that is not allowed. So that's what it means. You can call it Marat Ayin if you want. The Rabbanan made a gzera. The Rabbanan said, you cannot do this. You can say their motivation is Marat Ayin. That's fine. But not everything that you think is Marat Ayin is Marat Ayin. That itself is a whole interesting topic. When do you say Marat Ayin? When do you not say Marat Ayin? But Marat Ayin, for those of you who don't know the words, it means that it will look like you're doing something wrong. Over here, it's not the motivation of the Chachamim, I believe, I think that's what it says pretty much, because someone's going to get confused. So therefore, that sounds very much that's Marat Ayin, but they made a gzera. So, Rabbi Yossi says it's allowed, the Chachamim say it's not allowed. The halacha is like the Chachamim. How do I know that that's the halacha? We'll just look very quickly right now. Source number 8. The fact that it's in a kli is not the problem. The problem is the thing getting warmed up by the kli, which means if you took your frying pan and you...
Your cold frying pan,
and you sprayed on it your low calorie with olive oil shortening, and you put it out in the sun, and then it heats up, and then once it's hot, then you put the egg in it. That would be a problem, because now you're cooking it on the hot frying pan.
Correct.
The problem here isn't the kli. The problem over here is toldot. Toldot hachama, using something that got hot by the sun to heat something else. That's the problem. That would be okay, because then the sun is heating. So that's also interesting. That's interesting. As I said, the principles we need to understand first. The applications are going to be more difficult. The Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 8. Let's look at source number 8. Shulchan Aruch writes, "Kishem she'asur levashel be'or, kach asur levashel betoldot ha'or." So first of all, that was not debated. That we heard from everyone, that just like you can't cook in fire, you can't cook in second generation from fire. Kigon litain beitza bitzad kedera, o l'shavra al sudar shulcham ba'or kedesha titzila. That you want to fry an egg either in a pot which is off the fire but is hot, or even in a handkerchief that was heated by putting it on the fire, and then as soon as you took it off, you dropped the handkerchief in it, that would heat it up. Don't ask me about that. Via filu. Yeah. You're not getting recipes from me now. V'yafilu b'toldot chama. And then when it said you can't do toldot, or it added v'yafilu b'toldot chama. You can't even cook in toldot chama. So here you see that the Shulchan Aruch rules like the Chachamim. The law is not like Rabbi Yossi. You can be sudar shulcham b'chama, just like you had the sudar, which was heated up in the sun, asur gzera atu toldot ha'or. You can't do toldot chama just like you can't do toldot or, which means you can't heat something heated up by the sun just like you can't heat something heated up by a regular fire. Okay. There's more that he writes about this, but for the sake of having a dream of getting through the sources, we will continue. Now, how does the Dud Shemesh work? So, to figure this out, I spoke to two engineers this week, and one electrician, another rabbi who has a degree in. I spoke to a physicist, and people who know thermodynamics. And I also try to figure out if we can get a way that we can solve all the problems. But look at the last page. Here you have a picture of a Dud Shemesh. Now, part of our problem is going to be that I don't know if you have a Dud Shemesh. I assume that you do. The law is that you should have. I don't know how your Dud Shemesh works. If it's a multi-story building, you may not have. I don't know how your Dud Shemesh works if you do have one.
Neither do we.
You don't have one. You're not allowed. They thought it was ugly.
No, no.
I didn't. At some point, the law was, but when they made the buildings that were much too tall, and certain zoning places, they said, oh, it's ugly, and therefore they didn't. Anyway, okay. If you don't have a Dud Shemesh, then you don't have to listen to anything I'm going to say today. You can start humming. Now, if you look at the picture on the last page, first of all, there's a wonderful picture of the sun. Secondly, you have this round thing on the top, which is where the water goes in. Most of the ones in Israel are not like this. Most of the ones in Israel, they stand up. They stand up. Over here, it claims the cold water goes into this long thing, into the dud. I mean, you have what's called in Hebrew the kolet, and you have the dud. The kolet is the thing that gets the rays of the sun. It's kolet. What do you call this? The panels. Solar collection panels, if you will. And that's on an angle. Excellent. And then you have this. Here's the problem. The way that ours work, at least in Israel, the things are standing up. The hot water is on the top, and cold water is on the bottom. Do you understand that? That goes into the thermodynamic issue. Because heat... Now, you're going to tell me, no, if there's one body of water in there. So, no. Cold water comes in on the bottom, and hot water rises to the top and comes out on the top, which means the pipe that goes into your house, and you'll look now, you'll pay attention, maybe we can look out the window some. Yes, we can up there. You can look and you'll see that there's a pipe on the top. The hose on the top is what brings the water into your house, and that's how the hot water comes in. Now, there's another thing that happens, and that is that the water inside the dud goes in both directions, which means it goes from the thing that has the water in it, into the solar panels, circulates, goes back in, and then we'll do this again. That's part of the thermodynamics. That's part of the thermodynamics over here. Okay, so that as I said, that's why we had to speak to someone who knows thermodynamics. That's just simply the way that things work. And so a lot of it is based upon all kinds of natural principles, including heat rising and circulation and so on. And that's more or less how this works. Where is our problem? If this were just a situation of the water being heated by the dude itself, then we have no problem whatsoever. Where does the problem begin? That when the cold water enters in, it enters into... See, in this picture is a little confusing because I see the cold water coming into the thing itself. I know. The way that they're built here, apparently, and that's why I want to be very, very careful. One of the things that I wanted to do that I didn't do this week, I wanted to go to some stores that sell them and actually look at the way that they're making them today. But we have to be careful because it could be that 10 people here have 10 different ones in their house. The ones that I've been able to check, the way that it works is by the cold water going into the bottom, and therefore when the cold water enters, it will get cooked at that moment in the other hot water. Now, what's the problem of that cold water being cooked in the hot water? Well, one problem is it's not being cooked by the sun. Now it's being cooked by something which was heated by the sun, which means you just now left the realm of Chama and you went into the realm of Toldot Chama. Now, if that's the case, and this is so simple the way that I just now explained it, why did he think that you were allowed to, in the first edition, by saying that you're allowed to use it, which means how can he possibly justify it? So I want to go a little bit further than the Gemara, and then you'll see what he did. If you can close the cold water coming in, the problem with doing this is you have to make sure the thing doesn't blow up. If you close the cold water going in, you will have solved the problem that I just now suggested, because then all the water was heated before Shabbat. Any of the water that gets reheated during the time, or will be done by the sun, because it's just based on the circulation. There's no cold water coming in. You will have solved the problem. According to most people, there's one opinion that suggests maybe it's still a problem of what's called hatmana. Hatmana is to completely cover your food on every single side. So this should be problem hatmana. Let's leave that problem out of it right now, because who knows if it really is hatmana by something which is by the sun, if they ever made that gezera. So let's leave the hatmana argument out of it. But if you stop the cold water from going in, you can solve most of your problems. But I want to read another line of the Gemara over here to understand what happened. Source number 3, which is a couple lines down on the same page, Meitve means there's a question, objection was raised, a question. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Migalgalin Beitza, Al Gabe Gag Roteach. Rabbi Gamliel says that you are permitted to take an egg and to cook it on a hot tin roof. That would one way to get rid of our cats. He says that you are permitted to put it on a roof. The ein gaglin beitza al gabi sidrotech. So what happened is that he allows this to be done on a roof. Now there's a slight problem with Rabbi Gamliel. What's the problem? Because in this case, you have a roof which is hot. Why is the roof hot? Because of the sun. When you put the egg on the roof, theoretically, what's the problem? The problem is it's being heated by something which is heated by the sun. Rabbi Gamliel could say that he holds like Rabbi Yossi generally, and therefore he's following that opinion, which is rejected. We've nothing that we don't need him anymore, or we can't do anything with Rabbi Gamliel. There's another possibility that Rabbi Gamliel said, but in the case where it's on the roof, who's going to get confused? Which means, how else did the roof get hot? Is somebody going to think that you plug the roof in to electricity, and that's why the roof is hot? Is somebody going to think that think about it in the time of the Gemara. Is somebody going to think that you put coals over there? Which means he's saying over here, you have something which is really allowed. Right? Cooking with the sun is allowed. Cooking from a derivative of the sun should be allowed. Why is there a gzera that you can't do it? Why did the rabbis prohibit you to do it? Because you'll insist calling it Ma'arai? Fine, we'll call it Ma'arai. Because somebody may get confused and think that you're allowed to cook. And that could be a problem with your frying pan. But on the other hand, if it's the roof, who in the world's going to get confused? And therefore, it could be that Rabbi Gamliel doesn't really hold like Rabbi Yossi. Although it seems that he does. But it could be he can say, but in this case, you should agree with Rabbi Yossi, because in this case, how can you make a gezerah on something where no one's going to get confused? You like that? This is the argument that the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata used in the first volume. What he said is, even though you're not allowed to use a derivative of the sun, right? Nonetheless, if you doing it on a roof, we have already a precedent that no one's going to get confused over there. What happened by the time the second volume came out? By this time, the Dud Shemesh had changed. By this time, everybody had an electric backup on the Dud Shemesh, which means originally it was a purely non-electrical solar heater. I mean, you want to think about it. It's quite primitive, but on the other hand, quite ingenious. But afterwards, they added to it one more thing. And what's that? That's the element that you speak about that gets burnt out. That element now allows you to do one of two things. That if there's enough sun in that dude, then you're going to have hot water. If there's not enough sun, then you flip the switch, and now it gets heated up. So if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach comes back and says, but that doesn't work anymore to claim that you can't make gzeira. The average guy in your house sees you put on hot water. How are they going to know that it's coming from the Dud Shemesh and not from that? And therefore, the gzeira that the Chachamim made should be no different over here than any other case. Are we good?
No. First of all, that wouldn't apply 8 months of the year in Israel.
No.
The assumption would be the same. Why would anybody turn on electric elements?
But still, if you have six kids and they all take showers on Friday afternoon, by the time you get to Friday night, the water will be cold. But I'm going to use that later on to be lenient. So hold on a second. We'll get to psikration. Right. So he allowed the roof in this case, even though it would have been a case of toldo d'chama. Even though it should not have been allowed, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel allows it. If you look at, we go back to that page 7, Shmirat Shabbat Kilchata, where it says Daf Yud on top, he writes in his footnote here, the anonymous person he quotes, in Samech Zayin, if you can see those small letters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines from the bottom. The first photocopied page. Shemati mi pi gadol echad. I heard from one person who he doesn't quote. Visvarato imo, and the logic is with him. He said, "Kimat tam asru toldo d'chama." What's the reason we don't allow to use the second generation from the sun? Gzera atu toldo ta'or. We make a gzera that person will get confused. Zeh shayech b'shar dvarim. kimosudar uchamitaveria. That is possible by all kinds of other situations. V'sham yochlam olam lechshov shitchamim ba'or. Then somebody could think that it got heated by fire. Ulechein atulach lufe. A person may make the mistake and switch from one to the other. U'misham hachi gazer, and that's why the rabbis made a gzera. Aval hacha shadud shemesh miyuchad ach v'rak l'mayim shemachamim b'shemesh o b'toldotah. And over here, where the dud shemesh is used exclusively only by the sun. You can't make a gzeirah. So again, I just have to point out, if you have a switch on your dude, what he just now said over here is no longer true. You can argue whether you should still may be able to use this, but this line was no longer true by the time he put out the second volume. So therefore, you can tell me pressure, you can tell me charedim, you can tell me anything that you want. And by the way, what is... the rumor is that Rav Ozner, you should have Rav Shlema, Rav Ozner, who's a great posik in Bnei Brak, the Chazon Ish asked him 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, to become the Rav of Bnei Brak. Rav Ozner wrote a haskama to the Shemir Shabbat, but he wrote in it, but I disagree with you on this point. And he asked him not to publish haskama if he's going to be lenient on this point. So if you want to say that's the pressure, you know what? He has 10 other rabbis who wrote Haskamot as well. But I'm just pointing out that the logic that he uses over here, anybody who's going to tell you, well, I follow the first line of Shemirat Shabbat, Kilchata, it means one thing. It means they never read the footnote, and they never learned the Gemara in Shabbat, and they don't know the Halacha, because it's not an easy argument to back up. Now, therefore, should we just give up? No. I want to show you the first tshuva that I found that dealt with the question. Yes. Part of what he does later on in the footnote is he does point out that there are certain people who rule, like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, but I will counter and let you know that it is a vast minority and it is not the accepted position. Now you can say, hold it, not accepted. And by the way, the Yerushalmi doesn't even believe that there's such a thing of toldot hachama at all. The Yerushalmi goes like Rav Yossi. He says, the rabbis in Bavel went that way and we go this way. Still, nonetheless, if we're going to judge this halacha, the same approach that we take to other halachot, there are normative approaches and normative opinions. There are opinions along the way that have been rejected. One opinion in this topic which had been rejected is the opinion of Rav Yossi and is the opinion of Shimon ben Gamliel because he's following Rav Yossi despite the fact that there is a certain logic to it. Source number 9 on page 2. Source number 9. This is of Tzvi Pesach Frank. Tzvi Pesach Frank was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim for many, many years. He's somebody who somehow was able to... I mentioned him last week as well. He was somebody who was somehow able... He was the one who said to sell the tree to the non-Jew cut down the tree, if you remember that. He was somehow able to be completely accepted by the entire city of Yerushalayim, the quote-unquote Haredi world, the more modern world. He was a great supporter of Rav Kook, including of the establishment of the chief rabbinate. He was Rav Rishi Yerushalayim for many years. He died in 1960. So again, I just want to point out the year over here. He's writing a tshuva about Dud Shemesh, presumably some point before he passed away. Tichat Berez Shel Dud Shemesh B'Shabbat. Tichat Berez Shel Dud Shemesh B'Shabbat. B'davar ha-she'ela al-ma she'nitchadesh hayom, she'dud mayim mitchamem mikoach ha-shemesh. And regarding this new thing that we have, where water can get heated up by the sun, she'dud omed al-gag, and he describes it, the dude sits on the roof, klapi ha-shemesh, u'kushlochin b'shabat mayim mechamem, me'aberez ha-nemshach midud ha-mayim. When you take water from your sink, from your faucet, which is connected to this dude, tekaf nichnasim mayim karim, immediately it is replaced by cold water, in the dud, derech tzinor acher from this other pipe, and emshach she'adud hacham she'al pnei agag v'chom hamayim magia gam lidei bishul, and the hot water causes the cold water to be cooked. V'nimsa shebidzeh she'notam mayim chamim oseh she'yikansu mayim tzonanim v'shul b'shabbat. When you take the hot water, you are causing cold water to replace it and to be cooked. He neimash nistapek al etzem bishul mayim bidud shel shemesh im ze nikra mevashel bechama atzma o betodot chama ze lo nogea b'nidon. Now the question that he was asked regarding the dude was a different question. He was asked whether the dude, as it cooks, is considered to be chama or todot chama. And what is the answer? I'm not even getting into that because that makes no difference. Because the reality is that when the cold water enters into the thing, the cold water is getting cooked by the hot water. Now, if you were following the logic till this point, what should his conclusion be once he said this? his conclusion should be now that it's asur. Shebedidon shelofneinu horei mayim hakarim nichnasim l'toch hamayim hachamim avashilim b'mayim hachamim. The cold water gets cooked by the hot water. V'mayim hachamim b'vaday toldot chamahim, and the hot water, which is now in the dude, is certainly toldot chama, second generation from the chama. V'nimtza shemem vashel mayim karim b'toldot chama shesur midrabanan. So therefore, there should be nothing to talk about. This is asur midrabanan. But as every great posek, turn the page, he continues. By the next paragraph, he writes, Ulam, however, nira, it seems to be, shebenidon didan, in this case, yesh lahakel. There's nonetheless a reason to be lenient. After he told you what the problem is, there should still be a reason to be lenient. Mishum sheyesh bizeh od kula, shekol habishulkan hu rak grumma, sheknisat hamayim akarim latoch adud, ein ze koach rishon, ki bekoach rishon yotzum tchila mayim achamim, uv makom nichnasim mayim karim. Now, what he just now did is that there is a thing called grumma. A grumma is to cause something to happen, but it doesn't mean that you're doing it itself. Over here, what's the problem? The problem is that the cold water is going to enter into the hot water. What are you actually doing? You're taking hot water out of the sink. That's your action. Your action causes a domino effect, but your action is you let the hot water in come through your faucet. That's going to then cause cold water to go into the hot water. He said you're not directly doing it, you're indirectly doing it. Grumma, by the way, is not allowed on Shabbat, just in case you want to know. A grumma is not allowed on Shabbat. It is allowed on Chag, it's not allowed on Shabbat. But this is a grumma of a drabanan, which means a grumma is not allowed midrabanan. So now the question is going to be, when you have a grumma of a drabanan, is that going to be allowed or not allowed? And then he goes and brings some proof to this. He is a little afraid to rely on this. If you look at the paragraph underneath it, he writes, Elo demistapkna, demistapikna, I'm not sure, I have a safek, to cave and to call ikur chiyav al malachad bishu la'olumi de grumahu. All cooking is a grumma. How do you cook? All cooking is a grumma, right? You don't cook, right?
You cause food to be cooked. It
doesn't cook by itself. I know, but he's pointing out.
No, but you're not trying to say, gosh, I wish I had more hot water in my boiler. You're just saying,
I know.
In other words, by opening your faucet, you're just opening a faucet. You're not like thinking about, I'm running out of hot water in my boiler.
You're not the same reason you're allowed to open your refrigerator door. You're not trying to set the thermostat to go make the stuff inside colder. You're taking something out of the refrigerator. The fact that a chain reaction happens when you open the door, the air inside gets warmer, the thermostat goes down.
Right. Which brings us to another point, and that's what you tried. Right. Which brings us to another point, and that's what you started to say earlier in terms of something which is called a psik ratio. A psik ratio. Here's a new term. If you never learned this, if you've heard it, you never knew where it came from. It's a most wonderful principle in psik ratio. Literally, the word psik ratio means to cut off the head. Pasak rosh. Cut off the head. The case of the Gemara is that somebody has a kid who's making too much noise, and he wants to calm the kid down, give him something to play with. He looks around, there's nothing to play with. He sees a chicken, but a chicken could be dangerous for a kid. So he takes the chicken, cuts off its head, and gives the kid the chicken to play with, which is now dead. Don't ask anything. So the Gemara said, now, is this a case that you're guilty of killing on Shabbat? Normally, why would you kill? You kill because you want the chicken. You want to eat the chicken, that's why you kill. But over here, you just want to give your kid something to play with, which means, are you allowed to do it? So the Gemara says, no, this is called a psik ratio, which now became used for all kinds of things where you will have a direct 100% result. So a psik ratio is not allowed. A psik ratio is not allowed on Shabbat. Now, when we get to psik ratio, there's also different types of psik ratio. There's a psik ratio denichale, a psik ratio that you want, and there's a psik ratio delonichale, that you don't want the result. Now, it's not clear how you define those two terms, because there's a medium case, and that's called a psik ratio de lo ichpatle, a psik ratio that you don't care about. One approach is the only time the psik ratio is allowed is if you don't want the result. Another approach is the only time the psik ratio is not allowed. I'm saying this the right way. The only way that it's allowed, is if you just don't even care about it. So this medium, you know, there's different ways of looking at it. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was actually very lenient on this, and he said a psikreisha de lo ichpat le is not a psikreisha de nichale, and you need to want the result in order to prohibit it. I'll give you an example. That's the example. The example is you cut off a kid, you cut off the chicken's head, not the kid's head, to play with the chicken blood. You cut off. No, that's literally the case. You could say, hold it a second. The Gemara says psik resha v'lo yamut. You're going to cut off a head; it's not going to die. Of course, meaning this is a direct result. And the Gemara, one second. The Gemara says that a psik resha is not allowed. But over here, and I want to not give some other case over here. In this case, in the case of the psik resha, and a lot of people will now play with this in different ways, that the psik resha is going to be, why are you opening the faucet right now? What is your purpose? And are you saying, I'm opening the faucet because I want to cook the water? No. You're opening the faucet because you want hot water now. What's the psik resha? The psik resha is going to be that the hot water is going to cook. So over here, now I can ask, is that something that I want, or is that something that I don't want? The cold water is going to go. Now, right there, I may get into this issue of psikreisha nichale lo nichale lo chpatle, which means I'm going to make this very easy. Let's say it's Shabbat afternoon. And you don't care anymore because after Shabbat you could put on your boiler if you're going to need, right? So you don't care if more cold water goes. In fact, you can say quite the opposite. Any cold water which goes in at this point is only going to cool off the hot water which is there, at least initially, and that's not necessarily something that you want to take place. Which means, but going back to this point, you said, what do I care right now? I'm not even thinking about what's going on right there. So over here, being that it is an indirect necessary result, so over here I have this idea of the psikreisha, which also, if we'll make this a little more complicated to you, now you understand why I never wanted to get into this topic, because you have to end up getting into all kinds of details of Shabbat. I could end up saying, is there such a thing as a psik resha by Drabanan? Again, I now have a psik resha by Drabanan together with the grama, and I put all of this together despite the fact that Tzvi Pesach started off by saying that this should not be allowed. By the time he gets to the conclusion over here, he says, look at his last paragraph. He says, it's a grama, it's a psikresha, you don't have it in mind, it's a result that you're not even thinking about, there's no kavanah over here. So he says, you put all these things together and we'll find authorities that are lenient. Which means he ends up building a heter based, not that you're allowed to cook with the toldot Hachama, you're not allowed to. But what does he end up by saying? That your action of taking the water is distanced enough from the cooking that is therefore is allowed. Rav Avadya takes the same approach as this and multiplies it by bringing in a whole bunch of other technicalities over here in terms of the water, including, by the way, claiming that by you opening the water, you're not doing anything. You're just taking away. You're taking away the thing which is stopping the water from flowing, which means based upon gravity, the water should be coming out of your faucet. Why doesn't it come out of the faucet? Because there's something blocking it. So taking away something which is blocking, he wants to even say is not an action, because you're not doing anything. You're just taking away. By the way, that by itself is not an easy argument. To claim that it is a psik resha by Drabanan is not an easy argument. By saying it's a grama, it's not an easy argument. By going one step further, which Rav Avadya throws in as well, by saying, and who said it's psik resha? How do you know exactly what's going on in the bottom of the dude at this particular moment? It may very well depend on how hot it is, how much water is there, how many people used it for showers before Shabbat or not, which means, do you know right now on Friday night when you opened up the dude, do you know right now what's going on? Do you know how hot it is right now? Do you know that the cold water going in is really cooking? Which means it could be there's no psik resha here whatsoever. So by the time the Rav Avadya finishes with all of the various technical reasons, he also comes to the same conclusion as the Tzvi Pesach Frank and says that there's enough reason to allow it even though there's enough reason not to allow it. Which means, if we now think back about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, one second, there were a couple of questions here meanwhile. Yeah. So that already becomes part of the, I don't want to say game, but part of the analysis of what's taking place. Is this really a psik resha or not? Which means, what is a psik resha? As sure as you know that chopping off that head, the thing is going to die, that's a psik resha. That is a necessary 100% result. But what if it's not? You don't know what the result is. So as I said, Rav Ovadia goes much further than him. If you want to see Rav Ovadia's tshuva, it's in source number 12. I reduced literally 60 pages.
Did you write his tshuva
with the first generation of Shemesh? Or does it matter? It's interesting because his tshuva is written in 1960.
Okay,
it's written in 1960, but he ends up with so many reasons to be lenient. And what does he do at the end? He throws them all together. Just 1 second. But you can take a shower in your hose now.
Right.
So, as I said, correct. I said Rav Ovadia uses
cold water, no longer cold.
I know. As I said, that's part of what Rav Ovadia uses. In the whole first part of the tshuva, he describes how the Duch Shemesh works. So you want to know in source 10. Sorry. I take that back. In source 12. In the whole first part, he describes how it works, which I did not include the whole thing. Although source 10, the Minchat Yitzchak, who ends up being strict, he's the one who throws the Hatzmana into it, but he lived in sunny Manchester at the time. He never saw a Duch Shemesh. And he writes here, he never saw the sun. He didn't know what cooking with the sun was. I'm kidding about that, but he does say, all the rabbis in Israel talking about this, I've never seen one, but reading, you know, some other tshuva, most likely it was Rav Ovadia's tshuva reading it, because he goes into really detail about how it works. So if the Mincha Yitzchak comes to the conclusion that you can't use it, for all kinds of reason, he doesn't like any of the Heterim, both the Tzitz Eliezer in 13 and Rav Ovadia in 12 end up allowing it. The Tzitz Eliezer goes even further. He's convinced that the Duch Shemesh is Chama and not Toldot Chama. So, which means, again, you can. I'm not going to read the whole thing now, but he was somewhat convinced that it's Chama and not Toldot Chama, and he thought, therefore, that the water is being heated by the sun, and which is also a little difficult to back up once you realize how the thing works, but that's the approach that he takes. Yeah. Yes, but generally, what kli is that by the time you're putting it in? Right. And that's the reason. Let's look at Rav Ovadia a little bit. He starts off by telling us in the first thing, which is underlined there, all of the background in terms of what is chama, what is toldot chama, and telling us that therefore you have an isur. This is in source 12 of toldot chama. Halfway down the page, we skipped all the way down to section to chapter lamed bet within. Right, we just skipped 32 chapters of him. He goes, Uminele nidan didan. In our case, kevin sheyesh tzorech lishtamesh b'mayim mechamim. People need hot water. Lahadachat hakelim, to get utensils clean. V'nikunam. V'chein b'yemot achorev l'chitzat yadav. And also during the cold days to wash your hands. Shapur dam, you're allowed to. Afal pishashech, even though shebechrech nechlasim mayim tzoninim ledud shemesh. Even though you know that cold water is going to go in, kevin de toldot chama asur levashel behem rak midrabanan, because you're dealing with the drabanan gzeir atu toldot haor vavalei psik resha, that's the peresh vidrabanan. Now for Sfaradim, a psik resha on a drabanan is allowed. For Ashkenazim, it's a little bit more difficult, but for Sfaradim, no, not everything else. For get up for slichot for a whole month. There's a price to pay for all that rice they eat. So he says right away that it's allowed, but then he continues to say, and even for Ashkenazim it's allowed, and he shows why. But what he ends up doing is he starts at the Psik Resha. He goes on in Lamed Dalet to say, Mulvad Kala Omer Nira the Ikra Ein Adav Abora Debinidan Dudan Chashiv Psik Resha Bishalamayim Hazurin L'Tachadu. He goes, but I'm not even sure there is a Psik Resha here. I'm not even sure that the cold water going into the hot water and cooking is a result of what's going to take place, which is the second argument that he uses. And then he goes on the bottom of the page there, talking about that you don't know what exactly is by the bottom of the dude, how hot, how cold, and maybe the whole bottom already is cooled down because a lot of people already used water, so therefore it's not a Psik Resha. And by the way, therefore, using it Friday night after people already used the dude, if they theoretically did. Using Friday night, therefore, may be much easier, because what's going to happen then? It could be that the water which is inside is already somewhat cooled off, and therefore there's no psikresha, and therefore it's loud. Now, what happens to all that cold water that goes in? It mixes, and eventually will go to the dude, and the next day it's going to heat up, and then it's, and then again, by the next day, it would be fine to use this, but the problem will come, what happens to the new water that goes in the next day? But he says he's not even convinced that there is a psikresha over here. He's not convinced that the hot water touching the cold water right there where it comes in is Yad Soledet. In order to make to claim, you have to say that it's really is cooking. You don't know that. On page 5, around 6 lines down, where it's underlined, V'chein shemati mipi mumchim ki b'derech klal ein amayim shebishifulei hadud megiyim l'dergat chom Yad Soledet. And I've talked to experts. Now, again, I want to be careful. He wrote this in 1960. He said, I've spoken to experts, and experts have told me that the bottom of the dude is not Yad Soledet more often than not. So once it's not Yad Soledet more often than not, how can I say it's a psikresha? And that becomes a part of the reason that he is lenient. He then, in Lamed Vav, we skipped another chapter there, by the next paragraph, Uvitchilat kazav lahatir, mishum shepetichet haberes eina ela hasarat haneya. He goes that you're not doing an action, you're just stopping the thing which is preventing the water, and then he says this is a grumma. So now he has a grumma by a psikresha, by a drabanan, and he continues in Membet and says, Maskana didina, my conclusion is, Toach haberish amayim chamim shehu chamu bidud shemesh, l'shamesh ben b'shtivat kelim v'chitzat yadayim u'lishtiyah v'kol kiyotzi b'zeh. All this is all allowed. He writes, "Umihu umif shar l'skor teberes hamaavar shel hamayim etzoninin ulechsom ayedez etrima." If you can close the cold water coming in, he says, "Nachon la'asod kach." It's certainly better. K'day letzait mikol pikpok, to get out of any kind of doubt. Avakashi ifshar la'asod kain. But when you can stop the cold water from going in, mutar l'shtemesh b'mayim chamim, you can do it. He does point out that there may be a problem, and I didn't touch this at all because it's a whole separate issue. If you have the water completely cold or completely hot, but if you have a faucet that causes the hot water and the cold water to come in out together, that, he says, may be a problem, because then you may directly be cooking the two of them together as the two of them merge together. So some people have... Right, but if you have one faucet, that's what it ends up doing. Right, right. I am pointing out that he is raising another technical problem that needs to be... understood that there is a technical problem. Nonetheless, you will love his last three lines. Ulam gama mekilim yesh lamam. Okay, he says if you want to be strict and cut off, it's fine. Ulam gama mekilim yesh lamamashi yismachul alacha lamaseh. Those who want to be lenient and not shut the cold water have what to rely on. V'hachi marinin besakadaitich bekocha dehetera adiv. And the power to be lenient is preferable. I mean, how does he come out and say that it's better to be lenient? Which is quoting the Gemara. It's better to be lenient. For a very simple reason. He already told you the simple reason. You're dealing with the gzeira, drabanan, where you have a possible psikresha, which anyway psikresha is allowed according to him, and there's a grumma, and you start throwing all the reasons to be lenient. It's not a very bad argument. The problem over here, the weakness in his argument, is he doesn't address the issue of psikresha, nichalei or not lichalei. Is this really good or is this not good? Which means you can begin to debate that maybe you want that additional water to go in for all kinds of reasons you want it going in. But as I said, that is a possible weakness within it, and we'll leave it at that. The Tzitz Eliezer likewise was lenient. Now that we've seen what we've seen, I think we can understand why in the second volume he didn't like the leniency of the first volume, and he writes better to stay away from it. Now, why doesn't he just come out like Rav Avadia and say, no, this is allowed? And by the way, in the footnote of the second volume, he does quote Rav Avadia, and he does quote the Tzitz Eliezer, if I'm not mistaken. What bothers him? What bothers him is this psikresha issue, is that he's not convinced it's not a psikresha, and a psikresha drabanan and Ashkenazim are generally more machmir. On the other hand, let's get towards some type of conclusion. The book that I told you about before that we never got to read, second to the last page, he writes, the term toldot chama refers to any object or substance which was heated by the sun and gives off that heat to something else. This form of solar heat is prohibited midrabanan and Shabbat because an outside observer might think that the object giving off the heat was originally heated by fire, but therefore give the appearance of toldot esh and not toldot chama. example, a frying pan or kettle that became hot in the sun are examples of tomel chama. It is therefore rabbinically prohibited to fry an egg or heat water in either of these containers. The rabbinic restrictions of tomel chama are highly relevant in halacha, since most practical forms of solar cooking are versions of tomel chama and therefore rabbinically prohibited. For example, solar heat is commonly used in many buildings in Israel that employs solar water boilers installed in the roof or buildings. To heat tap water, these applications are often classified as toldot chama. Because of numerous extenuating factors, there is basis to permit their use on Shabbat. And by the way, in terms of a halacha book in English, that was a very fair statement, which means theoretically you have something which is a problem. The problem is cooking the cold water in the hot water, but realize there are extenuating circumstances over here which may end up allowing you through it. However, most posts can prohibit using the hot water in these buildings under most conditions. A rav must be consulted in time of need. Now, and as I said, this is a very fair assessment of the situation. You have a nice Hebrew book over here, which is also written by a Ger Chassid, which you have a couple pages before, who does a similar thing. He said, if it's the page before, and it says Yesh Osrim on the top of the page, one paragraph, Yesh Osrim, the page before, Yesh Osrim, some say you're not allowed because cold water will go in immediately. And there are even those who will claim that the solar panel itself is toldot chama and not chama. That happens to be because of the way that it's built. Because you have pipes going through it and the pipes heat up, so it's not so simple how the dude works if the dude itself is chama or toldot chama. So there are those who are even concerned about that. And then in the next paragraph he writes, v'yesh matir and leftorach hadaber is Virazahar, he goes, look at the concerns before, which is mainly about mixing the cold water and the hot water. And those who still say that maybe it's better not to. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach felt it's better not to do this. But if you noticed his language in the beginning, it was written the way that a Talmud Chacham writes, or if Neubert was formulating it, writing, it's better not to use it. Yesh limane, it's better not to use it. Why? Because you have a problem of toldot chama, you have a problem of gzeira. On the other hand, are there all kinds of what he called extenuating reasons in order to allow it? Yes, and you saw them. What are the extenuating reasons? Because we're dealing with a drabanan, we're dealing with a psik resha, we're dealing with something which may not even be a psik resha, we're dealing with something which may only be a grama, we're dealing with something which may be gravity and not even your direct action. And once you start adding all of these things together, in terms of halacha, you're dealing with a drabanan, each one of these things takes it a level down, and you end up saying, okay, this would be allowed. My personal feeling would be that it is better not to use it. However, if you are somebody who is very, very sensitive to the cold, that in terms of cold water pains you. And let's say you want to wash dishes. And I don't care right now, you're going to tell me it's not as effective. It just takes more time to wash. But if you tell me, but if you'll tell me that the cold water causes pain, tsar. So then there's a whole other heter here, which no one discussed, and that is b'makom tzar lo gazru. In a situation of pain, the rabbis did not include their gzeirah. Which means over here, when you're dealing with the drabanan, and there's all kinds of reasons to be lenient, if somebody will say, but you know, the cold water hurts me, so that's another reason to be lenient on top of everything else. Better to avoid, but let's say you have an infant, and the infant needs to be washed off. Are you allowed to use it to wash your infant? Yes, because that becomes more extenuating circumstances that he was saying. That's the time that's the part that he didn't include here, which, by the way, does include a lot of that in the Hebrew footnote in the back of the book, which I didn't bother photocopying for you, but I have over here as well. But there are other times that one can be lenient. So therefore, basically, to say the Dud Shemesh is a one-sentence answer, can you? Yes, no, no, it's not so simple. As far as this urban legend of the first volume of Shemirat Shabbat Chol Chatah, that he wrote something which was absolutely correct, he wrote something which I believe to be problematic. His basis was somebody who he didn't want to say who it was. That's problematic. And then he works very, very hard to try to show that we can follow Rav Shimon ben Leil, even though that approach was not really accepted within halacha. On the other hand, I think along the way, you saw the brilliance of Tzvi Pesach Frank and the brilliance of Rav Ovadia, and also their appreciation that this is something which is necessary today. And because it's necessary, again, their starting point is, if you'll tell me it's necessary to drive in a car, that may be a little bit different. But on the other hand, over here you're dealing with a drabbanan, on a drabbanan, on a drabbanan, which may not even be a psik resha, is only a grama, and so on and so forth. You end up having those who want to use it have what to rely on. It's not just for Sfaradim, although for Sfaradim it's easier. Rav Tzvi Pesach Sfarang Tshuva is very good. What bothered Rav Shlomo Zalman, I just want to say it's slightly different, it's not just the Psikresha, he says now people cook with it. Now people actually use the Dud Shemesh with a switch. So now people do cook, so maybe you should have that gzeira that people could get confused. That's not such a bad argument. That's what bothers him now. People now have an electric... That's what bothered him over here, is that now people will get confused. Although you could tell me, again, Middle East, who's going to get confused within the summertime using a dude? You can debate this point, yeah. But just one second. And that's why he doesn't prohibit it, but he thinks that maybe it can still fit into the reason not to use it. Yeah.
Friday night and close to Mosul Shabbat, is that even more so prohibited? Like, because of the whole...
I think it's easier. Yeah. I think it's easier. Okay. So, apparently I'm like a DJ, I take requests, so I'm waiting for someone to tell me what we're doing next week. No, next week there's no class, 2 weeks.